You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Matt, welcome to The Back 40.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
So give our listeners a little bit of a sense of just exactly what is the Deep Space Food Challenge.
The Deep Space Food Challenge is what we feel an amazing program to spur on innovation, really. Our objective is to create novel food production technologies or systems that require minimal inputs while maximizing output of fresh food. So we're talking creating food for astronauts, so that's pretty exciting, but also looking at how any of the technologies and innovation that come out of this challenge can be applied to us here on Earth. But really, it's a challenge prize approach where we give the best ideas, the best products, a prize.
Where did the idea for this come from?
The idea for this really comes from the fact that for space exploration to be successful with our astronauts, we're not going to be able to ship mass amounts of food, mass amounts of equipment on these long missions that if we're talking about going back to the moon to stay in a sustainable way, and then future missions to Mars, there's going to be a lot of benefit to recycle air and water and also be able to produce food in situ. So the real driver for this challenge comes from the fact that we need it in space, but that a lot of this thinking about minimizing energy inputs, other inputs, while maximizing outputs can help us a lot on Earth here with, as we know, climate change, and as we know, with some other things that are very specific to us here in Canada that we can get into.
Yeah, when you start trying to supply a mission that is going to last months, anything that you want to get up into space, there's a certainly a weight limitation there as to how much it's going to take to get that out of Earth's gravity well and get it up into space there. Is the general idea on this that we're looking at is setting up a system that will recycle the items that you've already got, whether it's on the spaceship, on the surface of the planet or the moon? Is that general the idea of what we're looking at here?
Great question. So certainly, if we go back to fundamentals, like we do here on Earth, a person needs water, air, and food to survive, amongst other things. But those are the things that typically have a lot of mass, which, as you pointed out, Mike, it takes a lot of fuel to get to space. So it's complicated. And every time we launch something, it has a cost to it. So in any way that we can recycle those things in space, it helps us on a mission. And so recycling of water, we can do already on the International Space Station with machines or physical chemical systems, the same with air and the atmosphere environment. One thing we can't yet recycle is food. And so the beauty of the Deep Space Food Challenge is a way to find and produce technologies and systems for small volumes, minimal energy, but that can also produce food in a reliable way. And if some of these systems, the beauty is that besides just producing food, the fact that plants, for example, if we're talking about plants specifically, can also bring in what we breathe out, so CO2, and produce oxygen is perfect for a closed environment. And also plants can help us clean our water. And so if you're talking about very long missions of several years, these benefits really start to pay off. And so deep space exploration is going to require these technologies to feed our astronauts.
That's almost like your own ecosphere that you're taking with you as you're traveling along.
It's true. And it's complicated. And that's why the Canadian Space Agency, we're excited about the Deep Space Food Challenge, because it really does get people thinking about a difficult problem, but one that pays great dividends to the everyday person here on Earth in advancing the science and understanding of these systems. And yes, if our astronauts in the future are going to depend on these systems to survive, which we probably wouldn't have them do the very first time that these systems are introduced, we need to start somewhere, have them developed on the ground, which is what the Deep Space Food Challenge is doing. And it's a three-phase challenge with a design, some testing of a prototype, and then some long-term testing. And we can increase the reliability of these systems, which is exactly what we need if our astronauts are going to depend on them in the future.
Yeah, so walk us through exactly how the Deep Space Challenge works. How do you attract people? Who gets involved? And what sort of projects are you looking at that might be successful in the end of it?
So the way that we have set this up, and we're very fortunate, we are working, Mike, with the Privy Council's Office Impact and Innovation Unit, which is a program called Impact Canada, which is looking at new ways to spur on innovation. And this is the first time the Canadian Space Agency has worked with Impact Canada on a challenge, which is amazing. And we're also working with our international partners, NASA, on this challenge. And as you know, space exploration is very international in nature. I mean, the International Space Station is a perfect example of countries working together. And so with our partners, we've developed this challenge to essentially for us with the Canadian partners, so this Canadian Space Agency and Impact Canada, we're spurring on and looking for the best ideas in Canada. And we are so fortunate to have great innovators in Canada thinking and interested in this challenge. And our Canadian component of the challenge attracted 61 applications, and we launched the challenge back in January of 2021. And phase one has been closed now, and it's awarded 10 teams of each $30,000 prize for their designs. And those 10 teams have now moved into phase two, which is a prototype phase, which essentially will also last about or just over a year, will last to March of 2023, where teams will be testing their prototypes in their own labs, producing food that we'll test. And then those successful teams, of which there will be four, will have a $100,000 prize and move on to phase three, which will be a long-term test of the technologies that they've developed. And we feel so great, just the diversity in terms of the teams that have applied, from university teams to industrial teams to small companies that have also applied, running the gamut between people proposing ideas of insects, insect production, plant production, algal-based systems, and we even have one team, a yeast production system. So we got some great ideas, and the Canadian Space Agency is just excited because this really can help us in planning out some of the longer term missions that might come into the future, Mike.
Well, some of these long term missions, we hear a lot in the news about various private companies that may end up trying to colonize Mars or try to get to the moon. Who all is this technology going to be available for? Is this something that's going to tend to be an open source that anybody is going to have to be able to access, or is it for a specific group of people that may end up in space?
One of the biggest drivers that our team at the Canadian Space Agency, as well as the Impact Canada team, has really pushed is that we want whatever that comes from the challenge to have those terrestrial benefits. Yes, it's going to hopefully in the future be useful to feed our astronauts, but the focus also has to be on what of the technologies has the best potential here terrestrially, and especially for northern communities, which we can get into. But when we're talking about the use cases for space, the international community right now, all the various space agencies that the Canadian Space Agency does work with are mostly focused on the moon and returning to the moon, but in a more sustainable way than we did back in the Apollo program. And if we're talking sustainability, Mike, then we're certainly talking about how we can produce food eventually in situ for the reasons that we talked about, or how we can produce food on the lunar surface. So our main goal with the challenge is looking towards the lunar surface, because we want the technologies that are developed to be more directly transferable to Earth-based systems. And why we're focused on the lunar surface is there is still some gravity, 1/6 the gravity here on Earth. And so the systems that are developed for there are more transferable than, for example, a system that would be developed for the space station, which is in a microgravity environment where there's many more complicating factors about separation of water and oxygen and like gas and other complicating factors that add complexity that you wouldn't need on terrestrial systems. So the moon's a good test bed and one that we're looking forward to working with our international partners and helping feed astronauts on the lunar surface.
I think many people will have seen the movie The Martian and the first farmer on a separate planet. And part of that I looked at and I sort of raised an eyebrow a bit on a few of the things there. But the concept there of growing the plants and producing your own food is one that certainly it's more complex than what we would think, that there's a lot of different factors that we would have to consider in order to make that work.
There are. And yeah, somebody with an ag background like yourself, yeah, I'm sure as you said, saw the movie, there's some challenges there that you might have done differently. But I think Matt Damon, the movie does a great job representing some of the challenges of trying to survive on Mars. Some of the challenges, as you said, associated with how we could grow food on Mars in this case. And yes, it's not an easy challenge. And that's one reason why the Deep Space Food Challenge and the CSA has organized it to help us think a little bit out of this box and really get people thinking about new ideas that we could imagine in the future could be applicable, and that we're not just, you know, are trying to grow potatoes out of our own human waste, and that we're doing things a little bit little bit more efficiently, so to say, that all of our astronauts are more excited to eat the food that is produced, because we need to keep the astronaut psychological health in mind as well. I mean, COVID, you know, many of us have been sort of more home constrained and sort of locked into our own homes to some degree over the past few years. And you know, that green stuff, plant life in our own homes, might have a few plants around. Astronauts on their missions, very much just equipment around the modules that they live in typically, and a little bit of green stuff can go a long way. So it's another benefit that growing plants or food production systems can have for future space missions as well.
Now, you talked a little bit about this having some connotations on Earth here as well. We kind of take for granted, you're near Montreal, I'm in Southern Ontario here, and we're in a great spot here where we can get access fresh fruits and vegetables and all sorts of foods. But if you go into a place like the Canadian North, for example, it's a lot more difficult to come up with stuff. This is the type of technology that could be used up there too, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think for us in Canada, we have an obligation to try to improve the food security situation in the North. The deep space food challenge is one small, you know, component that we, the Canadian Space Agency, hope will help advance the equation a little bit. We at the Canadian Space Agency are working with some of our other government partners and nonprofits on a few other initiatives in the North as well. And I'll point out one, Mike, called NARVIC, the NARVIC Initiative, which is a plant production system that we're working on with the Arctic Research Foundation, Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, the National Research Council, and the community of Joehaven, where the plant growth facility is located. But you're right. For us, I mean, if you can grow plants in the difficult environment of the high Arctic or somewhere else, that we have this unique environment in Canada that some countries like the Netherlands, who are amazing at greenhouse production and what have you, they don't necessarily have the use case where we can actually benefit our citizens by, if we can advance the technology, these communities can actually have access to fresh produce. And so even if we can move the needle to some degree with some of the innovation by minimizing those energy inputs or other inputs and maximizing production out of a smaller volume, we hope that some of this will transfer well into our northern communities, certainly.
Is your organization in need of funding? Trillium's Roots Community Fund is currently looking to provide money to projects for organizations that are agriculturally focused. Applications are now being accepted towards facilities or equipment upgrades, funding for research, innovations, and much more. To learn more about Roots, including how to apply, visit our website at trilliummutual.com and click Community at the top of the page. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. Talked about a mission to the moon where we create an ongoing presence there, and ultimately the idea that we may end up colonizing a portion of Mars and having trips there. So my question, I want to get your opinion on this, is why do we go at all? Why does it matter whether or not we end up on the moon or whether we end up on Mars? Well, what difference does it make to us as a society?
I think it makes a tremendous difference, Mike. To be honest, just the challenge of space exploration is one thing. We talked about being able to think out of the box. Developing and using that pull of space technology can help us here on Earth develop new systems that, again, can reduce the amount of energy that's required, because it makes us think of ways that we would not necessarily think about how to develop these systems and how to minimize them, how to minimize the amount of power they use, minimize the amount of wastewater that they produce for the same amount of output, for example. So on the technology side, certainly there's great benefit to think in this mindset. On the other mindset, I mean, there's the simple answers that going to space can help us answer and advance our scientific understanding of the universe, of the solar system, these fundamental questions that the human race has been thinking about for centuries and centuries. Going to space is just an exciting thing. We're spending a small amount of money on it, but we're not spending it just in the middle of nowhere. These are also spending money on high-tech jobs, on advancing science and education here in Canada. And to be part of an international collaboration and consortium with our international partners, the European Space Agency, NASA, and others, I think it's a noble goal that we should continue to work on together in exploring space and provide, you know, understanding the universe with science.
How far away are we from having an outpost on the moon where we have that continuously manned?
Great, great question. And yes, the goal of the international community, again, is on this sustainable presence of the moon, You may be aware the US-led Artemis program sets its sight on returning to the moon, and that is in conjunction with many other space agencies as well. The Canadian Space Agency has committed to Gateway, which is a lunar space station, and developing a Canada Arm 3, a robotic arm for the Gateway. And we're starting to look at what we can do on the lunar surface as contributions that Canada could make that makes sense from a technology perspective, that help out our industry, help out our universities, and help out our Canadian industry in general. And so those are the exciting things that are coming up. In terms of time frame, there's many discussions. I think the most exciting and most nearest term upcoming flight is when a Canadian astronaut will be flying on the Artemis II mission in only a few years from now, which will be the first time a non-US American has left Earth orbit and gone to the moon. And to think that a Canadian astronaut will be there. And then after that mission, there will be missions that will slowly land astronauts onto the lunar surface. So by 2030s, a number of missions will have flown to the lunar surface. And then from there, slowly a progression will happen that will allow us to focus on how we can stay there in a more sustainable way, Mike. So 2030s, you can expect a lot of action on the lunar surface.
I'm looking forward to it. It's not that far away. It'll get here before we know it. Now, how did you get involved in this? Tell us a little bit about your background in the base program.
Yeah, myself, Mike, always been interested in space, and most of my studies followed aerospace engineering. For some reason, when I was a young guy, I remember one video game called Wing Commander, where you could develop little spaceships, for example, you know, not for positive reasons, but to shoot each other down, for example. But I remember pulling out graph paper and doing a lot of drawings there, and having parents interested in science who also, in this case, graduated from the university where I did eventually a PhD in environmental biology. So my background's a mix of aerospace engineering and environmental biology. And throughout my studies, I was fortunate to be an intern at the Canadian Space Agency back since 2001. And after completing my studies, I was fortunate to do some postdoctoral work in the US and 5 years in Germany. And only for the past 3 years have I been back at the Canadian Space Agency. And it's just been a pleasure to be back working with the Canadian community of hardworking people really committed to their jobs and making a difference here in Canada. So overall, I've really been able to be to some difficult environments to grow plants, including the high Canadian Arctic, where 10 years we operated in-house on the largest uninhabited island in the world. It was a Canadian Space Agency project that ended in about 2012 called the Arthur Clark Mars Greenhouse. And then while at the German Aerospace Center, I was fortunate to go to the other end of the world, Antarctica, where we had built a greenhouse for the German Antarctic Station, where 10 people overwinter as the first time to provide them with fresh food. So all ways that we can learn how to eventually grow food in space, but also help us keep developing those difficult technologies that we hope can help feed us in the future.
You've been involved in surviving in some pretty inhospitable territories on Earth here. If you were given the opportunity, would you go to the moon?
Sign me up. Come on. But yes, right now focused on helping our teams develop these technologies that can make sure our future astronauts are safe when they go to space. And the Canadian Space Agency Astronaut Corps is an amazing one. And we're fortunate to have just an amazing group of astronauts. And hopefully they will depend on the technology that we're working on today.
So we talked a little bit about establishing a presence on the moon there. How long are we looking at, reasonably speaking, before we see traffic back and forth to Mars, to that first traffic to another planet within our solar system here?
The one exciting thing is that there are a number of robotic missions. You may have seen various rovers operating on the Martian surface that are doing some great science, helping us understand what Mars was once like and is today, and starting to open up that sphere of exploration. Certainly, the moon will be the test bed where we further some of those technologies that can help us more reliably go to Mars. You know, the moon is 2 to 3 days away, whereas Mars, depending on the way that you get there, can be 6 to 9 months away just to fly there. And so you want to make sure the systems that you bring to Mars are even more reliable. But Mars is certainly a very interesting planetary body to also help us learn about the Earth. And again, whenever we're going to space, we're also trying to help understand more about us here on planet Earth and our solar system. And so when we're talking about going to Mars, there's going to be many more robotic missions planned. And if you touch the crystal ball and look a bit further into the future, you can probably imagine people actually venturing there around the 2040 timeframe. But for now, the focus is very much on the lunar surface.
What's the biggest challenge? Like, we've talked a little bit about providing with your own resources, being able to provide life without having to be resupplied all the time. We've talked a little bit about how difficult it is to get stuff off the Earth up into space there. But what do you think is the biggest challenge that we face in all of this?
I think it's the combination of all those factors, Mike. I mean, there's environmental challenges like radiation. There is the fact that you are probably, you know, the crew size that you would send is 4 to 6 people. How do you pick the right group of people that you know will work together well over that 3-year period? How do you pick the right composition of the crew that if the doctor were to get sick, that somebody else is trained to take care of their duties and vice versa for all the other critical systems? And then there's the effect on the human body in the microgravity environment as the vehicle is transiting to Mars that can have obviously negative impacts on bone and muscle. And many of those things we've worked out each individually, but we just continue to advance and push our understanding of all of those as we go forward. And I think the moon will be a great way to reduce the risk. And in the end, it always comes down to how much risk we're willing to take to decide whether we pursue such a mission, you know, to Mars. What is the level of risk that inherently we're ready to take to say, okay, you 6 crew members are the astronauts that will go on this mission? From my personal perspective, a lot of the technologies are there, a lot of the experts are there, and it's just a matter of us slowly stepping through a few more steps before we're ready to do so. And there's some exciting things going on in the Canadian Space Program right now that are helping us take us there in terms of advancing science, some of the technology things that we've talked about, and a lot of the upcoming flights that we will have around the moon, like I said, Artemis 2, Gateway with Canadarm 3, and some of the science that we're doing on the International Space Station. It's just amazing things that are really helping us get to our next destinations.
Sounds like quite a challenge coming forward here, and one that I'm thinking that as humanity, I think we're up for it. I've been waiting. I'm old enough that I remember when the first person walked on the moon. I remember a question that was asked, that when will the next person walk on the moon and when are we going back? And I mean, we're now talking over 50 years and we haven't been back yet. And I'm looking forward to it.
Good. And it's only going to be a few more years. And I think the other beauty of this, and I mean, it's in the news these days, is international collaboration. And just this is a noble goal that we should, as humanity, work towards together, space exploration. And I think something that can help us bring us as a planet together as we move forward as well. And yeah, exciting times coming up, and your wait is not going to be much longer, Mike.
Yes, I'm hopeful that I live to see the first one and see the next one as well. You talk about it being a worldwide endeavor here. I mean, a little competition is a good thing. It pushes us all, but there's a point at which that competition gets in the way of the final goal as well. And we certainly can hope that that does not happen.
Agreed. But if we come back to the challenge, you're right. The Deep Space Food Challenge relies on good competition to come up with the best ideas. And to circle back to why we do it, I think in the case of the challenge and this prize challenge approach where we give prizes for the best ideas and the best designs, I think we're so pleased with all of the 10 teams that we're carrying forward in phase 2, that our universities, companies from Quebec to BC that have some really great ideas that will have some real good effects, we hope, on the ag tech industry and the community in general, and help well position that community to be a major player in space exploration. And who would have thought we can envision a Canadian greenhouse potentially on the lunar surface one day if we build this Team Canada approach, which is an exciting one.
It's not what I anticipated when I went to university for crop science, but it's something that we've come a long way.
We have. Good. And maybe we'll count on your abilities from that perspective, Mike. Be knocking on your door for some expertise too. Good.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's where the best expertise is. I'm sure there's a lot of other people that have great ideas as well. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us today. We've been speaking with Matt Bamsey from the Canadian Space Agency.
You've been listening to The Back 40. Join us next time when our guest will be John Cranfield from the University of Guelph. I'll be talking to John about their new Foundations in Ag Management courses that are being offered online for Ontario farmers. That's next time on The Back 40.
You've been listening to The Back 40.
brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.